that's what I've always loved about serious mystery, and we really wanted to do that in this book too. So there's kind of like, you know, there's the A plot that's the mystery plot, and we always have a B plot that's kind of the newspaper. What's happening with the newspaper? Is the newspaper going to make it through this season or not? And what's it covering? And who's attacking it? And so on. And is it sinking under the weight of its own precarious finances? All of that. But the C plot is always a relational plot, right? And it's not just the relationship between Kat and one of her family members, but there's the relationship of Kat with this village of characters who principally work at the newspaper, not exclusively. Mm-hmm. They're sort of her work family. And you know, that has a weight and gravity to it. And so, yeah, I've lost the thread of where we started there. I'm going to be honest with you, but I think that
I'm getting into sort of how you got your next novel.
So yes, so the love interest is kind of part of that, and it dips in and out, and if, you know, they get close and. We're just going to see what happens in the third chapter with that. But the truth is, Kat, as a psychological character, to use the psychotherapy term, is like pretty avoidant, right? So she struggles with romantic relationships. She's divorced. It was a bad divorce. She's a little jumpy. And I think I'm not a romance novelist. I like romance novels, but I don't write romance novels.
She was bitten by the divorce, but she's out of Toronto now, so she's probably okay.
She's totally. It was definitely all her ex's fault, and she'll be fine.
Wait. I know.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think that the truth is that, and again, I work with couples as a therapist, you know, it's not a smooth thing having a deep, intimate relationship with someone.
Right.
Really. Maybe that's just my experience.
There'll be questions from the audience.
Yeah.
There are so many threads that run between all three of your, three and a half of your books, and it just like I'm reading volume three, and I think you set that up in volume one. Did you know you were setting that up in volume one?
Because
it's so smooth. Like oh yeah, she's picking up that thread.
No, I didn't. I wrote the first book thinking it was a solo book. It wasn't a series. I was actually pretty adamant about it. So, you know, I had to find those tendrils and draw them out. But I do think that if you've done things right, what you have on the page in any novel is like 10% of the research. That's what is actually, that's the volume of words on the page. And there's a 90% that is like underneath the iceberg. And it's the stuff that earns you belief. It earns that feeling that you have, hopefully, when you read a book going, yeah, I believe this, I'm invested in this. I want to go on this journey with the characters. And sometimes all that stuff under that iceberg, and it never showed up, you actually use it to create more material, to find tendrils and tentacles that lead to other books. And that's what I found happened. That something that was just sort of buried underneath suddenly became a main thread in the next book, and so on and so on.
Yeah, well that's what a series is, right?
Yeah, it's just that I didn't plan it that way. So finding it, discovering it, was a real leap of faith.
Right. And I'm going to go back a little bit to that sort of 500 murders take place in a town of 50 people. How are you going to deal with that? Because Kat's still in
She's still in Port Ellis, and the population's dwindling. I know.
In some cases, that's a good thing, but not always.
No, it's true. I mean, it is sort of a challenge, right? When you're, it's a funny challenge, but you have to, and people will suspend disbelief to a point.
Well, I think of Murder, She Wrote. Ten years on
television. Icon. No, Jessica Fletcher is an icon for us. Apparently it's coming back. I've heard a rumor Jamie Lee Curtis is coming back.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I hope it's not just an Instagram. spare room, or I hope it's actually.
Somebody bought all those empty houses and.
Exactly, Cabot Cove. I know. Okay, so Port Ellis, what is Port Ellis? Port Ellis is like Cabot Cove meets Muskoka, right? That's what Port Ellis is. And so the nice thing about the structure of using of a small town mystery is it's like Barbie Land or like a land, right? If you decide you want to do a hospital mystery, which is we're doing the third one, you just like build a hospital out on the highway, whatever it is, right? And if you want to do a cranberry bog, well, look, there's a cranberry bog in Port Ellis, there's a movie theater, whatever you need, you can put there. But yes, there is the problem of people dropping dead very often. And I think that for us so far, we've sort of managed that by having it, you know, creating places where it's not really the immediate, other than in the first book, it's not the immediate village of characters that are, you know, falling prey to these forces of murderousness. It's, you know, there are outsiders coming in for various reasons. And so I think that helps sustain disbelief to a point. And I read Louise Penny, I'm sure most of you do. So, you know, in the early books, you can see, like, the village of characters is under assault over and over again. And at some point, she clearly decided, like, this village of characters needs now to be protected and that the murders are going to be happening a little bit away from. Right? The people that we love.
Especially after Gamache moves to Three Pines. Right,
and I think you have to, with each book, kind of navigate, like, you know, what's the zone of protection you want to put around the characters, because as people get more and more vested in them, you really can't be killing them off, right? Or having them sent to jail for murdering people. So, yeah, it's something we have to keep sort of navigating. Yeah. But so far...
But it works. I mean, in neither of your cases, I mean... I won't stay in the Regency Grand Hotel probably for a while.
Yeah, that's fair.
Probably because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But a hotel solves the same problem as a village where people keep coming
in. Very bad reviews, right? On Google.
Nita, I'm going to read a few lines from the Maid's Secret and ask you to comment on them, if you don't mind.
I'll try.
I'll just set up a little bit. Molly is about to auction off the Fabergé egg that came into her possession a couple of books ago, which you didn't know you were going to bring up in volume three. And she expects to make a lot of money from the sale. Meanwhile, she's become an instant social media celebrity, simply by virtue of owning a fabulous, valuable work of art. Here's what she's thinking before the auction. Quote, "So much of my life has been lived in utmost invisibility, and in the last week, everything has turned upside down. My life, my very person, has become a public spectacle. I felt entirely outside of myself, staging a performance of my existence instead of actually living day to day. Ironically, the more famous I become, the less I know about who I am, and the lonelier I feel." So it strikes me that Molly's experience is very similar to your own, the instant success of the Maid. And you no longer work for Simon & Schuster, and you know, is that how you felt about you're hitting the ground running?
It's very me until the last line.
Oh yeah?
Yes, because I have readers. And my relationship with my readers gives me a profound sense of belonging that I didn't know when I stepped into this world that I would find.
Right.
But we you know, I always think of the reader-writer relationship as a kind of, as a kind of participation and co-creation. I don't think of myself as the writer on high who delivers a book to you and go ahead, read my work of genius. I don't think that way at all.
You're not Mr. Grimsworth.
No, I'm not. I'm not like him. I try and put some words on the page. You go away, you read it, and you respond. And that response to me, that co-creation of imagination where I leave all these blanks and you fill them in. Where is the Regency Grand? You tell me. And you do tell me all the time. I think it's here. I think it's there. And I'm like, yes, wherever you think it is, you are right.
York.
For sure. Wait, you're right. That's the hotel. But that, to me, has given me relief from that sense of loneliness. You know, that Molly doesn't have that when she steps out into the public world. Right. And I think a lot of people with our phones and a lot of use, they step into that social media world and they feel a profound loneliness that they can't always navigate. But actually, becoming a writer for me has been exactly the opposite. I find a kind of communion with you, my readers, via these characters, because you suddenly have an understanding of them. And that makes me feel like we're in this together, you know?
Right.
And that has been really the greatest gift of that entire journey. But not unlike Molly, I would say that, you know, being an editor before that was a journey into invisibility. My job was to step back and to let the author step into the light. And so I had to reverse that paradigm. I had to get used to being the one on stage. And I still have these weird moments where I'm like, what is going on? I should be over there, not up here. You know, it's a bit of Alice in Wonderland. But that is mediated by the fact that I've gotten so much great response from my readership.
Oh, that's great. And yeah, as one of your writers, I'm glad that you're up here with me now.
Oh, thank you.
Because I always felt like you shouldn't be here listening to me, you should be talking to the person who actually made this book work. Anyway, I'm glad that the loneliness part of it doesn't work, but isn't part of you. But the hitting the ground running certainly is.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing. Really, I think Nita was such an unbelievably talented editor, and she worked with people that I know who were all kind of devastated when you stopped editing.
Sorry about that.
And then, no, but it's just...
I'm never going to write again.
It's really, it's an incredible story. Right? I think it's just amazing. It's been really fun watching you.
So can I come to therapy now? Have I earned my spot?
100%.
Now you can afford it.
She's gonna refer me.
Yeah,
she's gonna refer me to someone.
I can't see you objectively. I admire you too much. I can't treat you.
So Kat Conway has the opposite experience from Molly. She comes from Toronto. She's working for the Globe and Mail, I guess.
Yes.
She was married. She's coming. She's getting divorced. She's not getting married. She's lost a big job. Yeah. Lost her income.
In kind of a notorious way. She's been kind of driven out of the Toronto media scene.
With the tail between her legs.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to it sets her back, but it doesn't destroy her. And she's busy saving the quill and packet as much as she can. Dude, by the way, I just want to, where did you get the name The Quill and Packet? Did you get it from Stephen Leacock?
So Liz ultimately picked the name, and I think it is an homage to the Greater Relia paper, The Packet and Times.
Yeah.
Although we spent a bunch of time trying to, you know, there are these newspapers of wonderful old names, and we actually... pulled a lot of them when we're playing
when
with them
combine.
And putting different pieces together. And we really like, when we came up with Quill and Packet, we were like, that's it. That's perfect.
How does Quill and Choir feel about that?
I'm sure they feel very flattered.
I think it's time to turn the questions over to the audience. We're going to set the mic up in the middle. Please come. If you have a question, please come and say it at the mic. And if anyone has mobility problems, raise your hands and then we'll have a roving mic come to you.
I have a question for you. A couple questions. One is, are you neurodivergent?
I don't know. I've never been tested.
I am. And I wanted you to maybe talk to a room full of writers about how to write a character that is disabled or other-abled, if you want to use that term, if you are able, in a way that is respectful and authentic to the true experience. And as a caveat to the question, which I hope you address, I am neurodivergent, and when the word is said in such a way that elicits a room full of laughter, that is very damaging. So that's
a very good point. I want to address that. What I would say is that I don't know if I'm neurodivergent because I've never been tested, and I think that's important. Something that I wanted to do with this character was present somebody who, you know, they may very well be on the spectrum, but who, like so many people amongst us, had not been diagnosed. She didn't have access to the facilities that would get her the kind of, you know, advantages that those who have diagnosis would have. Many years ago, before I was an editor, I worked with special needs kids. So I taught, you know, a lot of neurodivergent students. Now, these were students ranging from the ages of 15 to 21. And I always think back on that time with such fondness because I learned so much from these students. And I think I must have learned way more than I ever taught. One of the things I loved to do with them was to take them out of the school. And we would sometimes have our lessons like at a donut shop across the street or somewhere else. And at first, because I was such a young teacher and, you know, so naive in all kinds of ways, I thought we were doing this for the students, you know? Oh yeah, we're gonna take them out in the world, accustom them to going on to little field trips, to the post office, to the donut shop, whatever. I was completely wrong about that. In the end, what we were actually doing was accustoming the world to these students, to these wonderful, brilliant people who were faced with stigma every single day. And I think that's what you're getting at, that stigma. You know, I watched these students, and they were, some of them had noticeable differences. I had a student, for instance, who rocked all the time, and that was his manner of self-soothing. And I had another student, and this is going to date me, but who carried around a stack of newspapers everywhere he went because, bless his heart, having the past in his hands made him feel safe. And so we'd go out into the world, and most people would treat these students with so much grace and dignity, except for the people who didn't. And those adults, those so-called normative folks, left a mark on me. And when I was writing Molly, you know, at first I wasn't aware where she was coming from. But in the end, what I learned was everything about these students that I taught and their grace, their dignity, their willingness to stand up for themselves and for each other and to claim space in the world, I wanted to write the book as a tribute to them. So what I did, and I wasn't aware of it while I was writing, but I took all of the best qualities of these wonderful students that I taught and I gave them all to Molly as a kind of tribute to them. So, I just want to go back to your question. I think sometimes when people laugh, and Molly says this in the book, are you laughing with me or are you laughing at me? And I think that sometimes we laugh in inappropriate moments, and that can cause pain. And I'm very sorry for that. That is not, I don't think people intended that. I don't think neurodivergence is anything to laugh at. I think anyone who is neuronormative and those who are not need to create room and space for all kinds of people with difference. And that, for me, is the most important part of the world of books that I'm trying to get to.
But when normative people create non-normative people, do you have advice for the writers who want to do that but don't have the experience of students or don't have the experience of their own life?
Do the research. I do, absolutely. If you do the research, get to know people who are going to give you the right feedback. I certainly had sensitivity readers who were neurodivergent, and that was a very important part of my process. I wanted to be certain that I wasn't making any missteps and that I was delivering a portrait that was respectful and beyond respectful, that was actually a tribute. And so I think that's my biggest piece of advice, is get advice from those who know more than you do.
I think if I could also add to that. So I'm a neurodivergent person, and not very many people know that, but I'm an autistic person. I was recently I'm a late diagnosed autistic person, and I've raised three neurodivergent kids. And I guess what I would say is neurodivergence is a really big tent, right? So. I've told the people closest to me, and now all of you, that I'm autistic, and they're very surprised, right? Everyone I know is very surprised that I'm autistic. I'm not surprised, but everyone I know is very surprised. So I guess what I would say is, I understand. I felt a bit of that myself, and I understand why that felt a little startling. I think that if you don't know, you don't know. And I think that neurodivergence is a new term, and a lot of people are just starting to learn about it and realize how complex it is and how widespread it is, and how private and invisible that struggle is. And I guess I just wanted to say that in my own writing, in my next book, I'm writing for the first time about Kat's son, who has ADHD. And so I'm writing a neurodiverse character. I feel very comfortable doing that because I've raised three kids with ADHD. But I think it's not something, I guess what I would want to underscore is that it's a very misunderstood category of difference, and unless you have, you know, some lived experience with it, or are very close to people who are in that category, you probably don't know as much as you think you know about it. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.
Thank you very much for those thoughtful answers. And to you, Nita, that was, in fact, my question. I have worked with a group of delightful neurodiverse adults, and they were spectacular and taught me more than I knew and needed to know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So thank you very much for that. I have a very lighthearted question, I hope. you gave Molly's grandparent the name Gran. I had a Gran, and I am a Gran to three. Why or where or how did you choose Gran?
Oh, you know, I think the book is you know, in the sense of place that I try to create, I really give sort of a mix of places and territories. And one of those places and territories of the mind or the spirit is, it has a sort of British feeling. And I think Gran has that British feeling.
Dickensian.
And yeah, maybe there's the Dickensian too. So that's where it comes from. And as for Gran herself, she's sort of an ode to a kind of matriarch that I grew up with. She is in many ways my own mother, but with some differences. You know, that kind of person who defined their family not only by who was a daughter or a son or, you know, somebody close to them, but the whole community became a family. And their embrace was so wide and so loving, and I wanted to give that to the reader. You know, I wanted them to have that person in their life who would create an instant, a sense of belonging. When my mother died, I just thought, I've lost something I will never get back, and it was so important to me. And what I learned through that experience was that I was dead wrong. When she was gone, it was like I created a distillation of herself in my own mind and spirit. And I hear her to this day. When I need her, her voice is crystal clear. It's in my head. Sometimes she is more present after her death than she even was in life. And that distillation has become, not unlike Molly and Grant, a kind of moral compass to me.
Thank you very much. I'm a big fan of the quote-unquote golden age mystery writing too, and also some more contemporary ones. And one of the things I like in some of the early Marjorie Allingham books is that there's kind of a natural justice. Some of the villains get taken off by natural forces, such as, what do they call it? Sand that you sink into, and
quicksand,
and the tide, a lot of things like that.
Spontaneous combustion.
And also in Carl Hyacin's books, I notice that sometimes there's that, like people who shoot rare, almost extinct animals, they get
trampled by a rhinoceros, an ancient rhinoceros, or something like that. Anyway,
Carl keeps one for the purpose.
Anyway, I was wondering, I will be soon, I will be going see Oscar and get your books, but I have not so far read any of your books. So I was wondering, are there any of that sort of thing in your books?
Nope.
No, no trampling in mine.
No, no, I don't have to be.
Maybe for the next one. Maybe we need a zoo in Port
Have Mississauga Rattlers up there?
Yeah, they should do. Nice point.
Rattlers and bears.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I do like a little act of God here and there. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah, no, I agree. Thank you for that. Yeah.
I'm glad. Thanks,
Nina, you have.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there are many acts of God. There are just acts of dastardly people and those who fix the problems.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll see what you think.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I look forward to feeding back and becoming one of your readers.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you. Thanks, Joey.
Hello and welcome to the three of you. I'm Kira from booknotification.com. It was such a wonderful interview that we had a couple of weeks ago. Thank you for that. And my question really, we're going to go outside of the books for a second and talk about being authors in this wild, wild west we refer to as social media and AI technology. And there are a lot of authors who are just now, you know, really getting into like the weeds of their debut novels, and it's intimidating out there. And they don't know the first place to go. And are they supposed to post their cover on TikTok and use BookTok as a hashtag to drum up that incentive for people to read their words? And I really loved how each of you were talking about your careers, and Nita saying, you know, maybe it was 20 years and 6 months or whichever it may be. You've had these wizened careers and you've seen this change in technology and the way that we're publishing books and the way that we're getting our words out to readers. So I just hoped that maybe the three of you could sort of commentate on that and what it must be like to release books in this very interesting saturation of world right now that we're seeing.
Oof, do you want to start?
I'll start, you finish.
Yeah, I'll finish.
I'll take my seat because that's really for all of us.
Does everyone have another hour?
Yeah, that is a big topic.
It's a big topic.
Well, certainly our laws haven't caught up yet, right? So a lot of authors are having their work stolen from them, and it's training AI, and that is a very dangerous world to be in. That being said, we're hard to replace.
I agree.
You know, I don't think writers are going to be very easily replaced, but the machine around writing is changing in a rapid way. What excites me, I'm going to talk about what excites me about this. The book has always excited me. It is a very simple technology. It is no frills, and it works so well. And so many times, the end of the book has been predicted. Certainly for as long as I've been in publishing, and there are people in this room who've been there longer. And it's always, it's the end of publishing, it's all over. No, we will find our way. We have to find our way in an equitable manner, and that's gonna be very difficult. And that's where law can help us, and we need to move faster on that to protect all of the people in the publishing realm, not just authors, but other creators who help us get to these things called books in the end.
Mm-hmm. Agreed with all of that. I think your question, was sort of a plea for some advice from established writers, for people who are trying to kind of break into the writing world through all of that noise that is out there. And I was on the train from Toronto to Kingston. I was writing a newsletter, having realized I had not issued a newsletter since April, which even for me is pretty lax. And I realized that part of what's been going, I'm fairly active on Instagram, but I've like let everything else go. And I realized that for me, as a neurodivergent person, as I've recently discovered, and now it's like piecing things together, you know, there's something about the cacophony of just having all of that information flooding at you and trying to decide, you know, how do I like hold my authentic presence in the face of all of this, and where do I find an audience that I can speak to in my own voice that will hear it? And that is becoming really much more confusing than it was when I started in the business. I have to say, I think I published my first book 13 years ago. And it was pretty clear to me what I needed to do to make contact, right, with readers. And it worked. Like, I kind of, like, did some research, figured out where should I be on what platforms, what kind of regularity should I be adopting to post things and so on. And it was actually pretty easy to understand and easy to execute on. And I'd been in some PR-related fundraising stuff before that. So I was like, okay, like, I can take these skills, I can move it to this sphere, and it will should generate this, and it did. And then about 5 years later, it didn't anymore, because it just got really big and really noisy, and there was so much splintering. And in these days, I feel, I have to say, a whole other mix of unease around kind of enriching our technological corporate overlords too, right? So I'm like, how do I want to talk to people about what I actually care about, and how do I find those people that I want to talk to? I do think there's some, like, hopefulness over kind of in platforms like Substack, where you can do some longer. It's weird. I feel like we're coming back to blogs. Mm. Like, it's coming full circle back to blogs.
Maybe we'll have newspapers.
Maybe we'll have newspapers again. Yeah, and this is what this great editor in Halliburton, she said, like, we're printing more newspapers because the young people, like, I don't know how young, but they want to actually get a paper and read coffee. They want to just go way more IRL. Like, they're off the digital. So it's interesting how these things come back. But I think, like, there isn't a quick answer to that. I think it is very difficult to figure out how to find a place for yourself. I do think it does come back to relationships over and over and over again. I find it very helpful to come in person to festivals. I like coming to festivals. I really like meeting readers. I used to do a lot of book clubs. Like, I do think there's something about that interpersonal connection and word of mouth that's very, very hard to replicate on social media. So do you have to have a social media presence? You do, but, like, find one platform that you like, put a stake in that, and just, you know, try to do something that feels relatively authentic to there. But otherwise, you know, it really is about the relationships, making, you know, going. If you're not invited to festivals, attend festivals. Others are pretty accessible. You know, other people who enjoy your work are pretty accessible. Join writers groups. Like, build a community, right? It is very much a person-to-person business at the end of the day.
That's a lovely note to end on. Kate, for a great morning of mystery. And thank all of you, the audience, for coming to this event. We want to know about your experience here. So please log on to our online survey at kingstonwritersfest.ca, and please join the authors in the foyer to get your books signed. If you don't already have their books, you can buy them in our festival bookstore, which is hidden behind a wall. Keep going down and then turn left. Thank you so much.
And begun at the beginning, or at the top, I guess I should say, of the first hour, you heard from an as-yet unaired event from the 2025 Kingston Writers Fest event. You heard a September 20th event then called Mystery at the Marriott, which was a conversation between moderator Wayne Grady and authors Nita Prose and Kate Hilton. It did run, if you've been tuned since the start, it ran uninterrupted through the top of this hour. And so there are a couple of things I'd like to do to kind of take us into this hour. First thing is, it is almost 34 minutes after 5 o'clock. And you have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We do stream live online as well every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock at www.cfrc.ca. And again, just a reminder that every week I do upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. Those remain there for 3 years. And I usually try to get everything uploaded right after I get home, which is usually about 7 o'clock after the show ends. And just a short mention, too, because I've been doing this since, well, I think maybe even the first week in January. I did record 10 events in total at the Writers Fest this past fall. And I believe that the one I aired today is the 8th of those. So there are still 2 left. And it's usually during this part of the year that I start to bring them to air. And so I may work those last 2 in the next 2 weeks, or I may have to check my schedule. I may have to split one up and then have one just a little bit later, but there are 2 left to air. So if you've enjoyed this, or just so to give you a heads up, there are a couple of more of these sessions that I will be airing here in the next 2 weeks, or at least the next few weeks. Before we move on, I'd like to extend my thanks to all of you out there for tuning into this first, now nearly, I don't know, 95 or so minutes of this show, and an equal thanks to Kingston Writers Fest, their staff and volunteers, and to Wayne and Nita and Kate for their wonderful presentation that afternoon, and just a wonderful event. And let's see what else I was going to say. You know what? I think I'm just going to lead into this. I do have some announcements and information to fill the remainder of the hours, but I'm also going to air a couple of songs yet before the show ends. So, but before we fully move into that, I'll tell you what, let's do this, and I'll be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly right by, it won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could volunteer with Canada's oldest campus radio station? Well, sign up to volunteer with CFRC 101.9 FM today. We're always looking for new volunteers, and we offer a free training program, so no experience in radio production is necessary. You can start your own radio show or podcast, contribute to our news collective, help us sort through music sent to us by record labels and artists, help plan events, record PSAs for us, and even more. Reach out to our programming manager, Alex Fernandez, via email at programs@cfrc.ca for more information, or visit our website at cfrc.ca/volunteer and sign up today.
as he cried, for the marks are back again. I have seen the kings of repertoire as they step down from the train. It's only noon, but school is done. It's a special holiday. We can all go to the Balder Sun to see the matinee. So, Ma, put on your crinoline. The vaudeville's back in town. Pa, get out that starch again. The vaudeville's back in town. Farmers hitched up mid-afternoon, left behind their rows to hoe, traveled miles of Mudrut County line to the Opry's evening show. Tom and Ernie made them laugh, Bob and Joe, they played it straight. All the virtue and the villainy, that was 1898. So Bob, put on your crinoline. The vaudeville's back in town. I'll get out your starch again. The vaudeville's back in town.
You just heard from a, let me get the dates right here. This is from a obviously local band that did a lot, I believe, in the late 90s or in the 90s and maybe even the 80s, I'm not sure. but the 90s and the early 2000s. And they recorded an album that might have been first released in 1999, but I have what is the second release of it that came out in 2008. The group is called Fireweed, and they are, and the title is a self, so it's a self-titled album. So the album as well is called Fireweed again. This came out in 2008. The song you heard was called Vaudeville, and I believe was written and released first in 1997. You have been listening. You are, I should say, and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM, located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And again, thanks for tuning in to this first hour and 45 minutes, I guess, of the show. And I hope you can stay tuned for more. I've got a little bit of information here for you, but then I also have another song I'm going to air at the very end. And see what I've forgotten here. Just a reminder, I think I'll do this now and then I won't have to do it at the very end, that both hours of this show each week I do upload to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrc.wordpress.com. And they do remain there for 3 years. Again, I usually get that done about 7 o'clock when I get home. Just let me grab the paper that I should have grabbed while that song was playing. Here we go. It's my information sheet about some upcoming calls and local events. Let me, I think I did calls last week, so let's start with some events. Some that are coming up most recently is that on next Thursday, March 19th at 6 p.m., it's a program called Single Page Continuous Scroll, and Fiona McMillan is going to do a poetry reading. This is going to be held at the Theological Hall Chapel here on Queen's University, 85 Stewart Street in Kingston. It says, Fiona McMillan, a poet and regular at the And the Journey Continues monthly open mic series and other places, will feature in a poetry reading on Queen's campus. So the building, this is for the people who aren't on Queen's campus. So if you want to attend, the building is located between Summerhill and Kingston Hall and just past the soccer field and the tennis courts near KGH. Next Thursday, so the next Thursday coming up, March 19th at 6 p.m., and you could make that and still make a book launch at Novel Idea happening that evening at 7 p.m. because they're that close, and even if you're on foot. And so Vera Hadzik and Richard Green with Michael E. Castiles will launch in this event on March 19th. Again, this is a Novel Idea bookstore, 156 Princess Street here in Kingston. Vera Hadzik will launch her first collection of poetry. I believe it's her first. She might have had a chapbook first, but I'm pretty sure this is her first full collection. And it's called Several Small Animals Enclosed in a Benedictine Monastery. Richard Green also will launch his latest, Cannibal Rats. And Michael E. Castiles will be reading new work as well. This will be hosted by Stuart Ross. Again, Novel Idea Bookstore at 7 p.m. Again, Thursday, March 19th. Let's see. And then we've got an event coming up a week from tomorrow evening. This is a new series that has begun on the west end of Kingston. I was there last month at the inaugural one, and it's a wonderful space. So it's called Common Language Poetry Reading and Coffee Bar. And again, a new monthly poetry series. Liz Huntley Jentz, founder of the series, says, and this is quote, join us at Grains and Goodies Coffee Bar, Studio 330 West End Wellness, for an evening of poetry and connection and damn good coffee, end quote. This month's reading will feature Jane McDonald, Joseph Eliot, and then also Liz Huntley Jentz, and a play excerpt by Larry Scanlon. They do have a Facebook event notice, so look that up. You should be able to just type in common language poetry reading and coffee bar, I think. Anyway, that location is located at, it is Grains and Goods Coffee Bar / Studio 330 West, the two businesses that are just connected, 851-855 Norwest Road in Kingston. It's just right beside the Cat Center. This is doors open at 6:30, and it's going to happen again a week from tomorrow night, so Saturday, March 21st, from 7 to 9 p.m. And I think I'm getting to the point where I need to play another set of these, so let me do this, and then I'll see if I'll have time to share anything beyond that. So let's go with that now.
Yo, Ellie.
Hey, Nate, what's up?
We're on the radio.
What? Like right now?
Yeah, it's on a promo from Live Sessions.
Oh, yeah, CFRC Live Sessions, Thursdays at 11 a.m.
Listen to sexy bands play live on air and hear exclusive interview highlights.
Sounds awesome. Tune in on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Lit. Okay, peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licht in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Greetings, loved ones. This is DJ Nasty Nexus coming to you live and direct from CFRC 101.9. I'm here to bring you the goods from my new show, Classless Radio, airing every Friday night at 11 p.m. I'll be giving you hits and hidden gems all the way from jazz to blues and hip-hop and R&B. Music from the soul that everybody needs. Hop on my wavelengths and get right with the kid to kick off your big weekend. Stay tuned.
Partners in Mission Food Bank could not exist without the loyalty, dedication, and support of volunteers, some of whom have been with us for over 30 years. Our team of volunteers consists of individuals who continually devote both their time and skills on a regular basis in an effort to make a positive impact on hunger and the food needs of the community. Volunteering has no age limits. Your commitment and energy is enough. It is a great way to make new friends and contribute to your community. Partners in Mission Food Bank volunteers provide essential services in many ways, including assembling daily hampers, sorting food donations, breaking down and portioning bulk items, packing eggs into cartons, keeping the warehouse safe and clean, and providing helpful input to other volunteers and staff. Interested in volunteering with Partners in Mission Food Bank? Please call our volunteer coordinator at 613-544-4100.
And welcome back. You are listening to Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at cfrc.ca. It is 54 minutes after 5 o'clock, and we are getting very close now to the end of today's show. And first of all, or maybe not even that because I've done it already, but I do want to thank you all again very much for having tuned in to the show today. And to all of those participants who I aired for their wonderful events. And so thank you all. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. I don't want to, and I think I've done it twice already, but just one last time, just my usual mention, just a reminder that I do upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. And also I want to just suggest, if you can, stay tuned to the top of the hour. You've got 2 hours of East Coast music coming up. Right at the top of the hour in a show called Saltwater Music. That's hosted by Rob Carnell. And then after that, you've got Salt Licked in Rapture coming up right behind that. Another hour of music and then different circles. And then stay tuned the full evening. How's that? And you'll see. And you can also go online, www.cfrc.ca. And you can look and see what our schedule is every day. So I suggest you do that. Anyway, my heartfelt thanks for tuning in today. I'm going to play a relatively short song to take us out of here. This is Bob Dylan. It's going all the way back to, let's get the year right, I think it was 1963. And his album called Freewheelin', The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan, title of the song, one of my favorites, I think, from that album is called Girl from the North Country. So here you go. Have a great week. Again, my heartfelt thanks for tuning in today.
If you're traveling in the North Country fire, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine. If you go when the snowflakes storm, when the rivers freeze and summer ends, please see she has a coat so warm to keep her from the howling winds. Please see if her hair hangs long, it rolls and flows all down her breast. Please see for me if her hair's hanging long, for that's the way I remember her best. I'm wondering if she remembers me at all. Many times I've often prayed in the darkness of my night, in the brightness of my day. Thank you. traveling the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine.